Chapter 7. Compliance. Swords of Red Iron. Carthage. The world had two names, only one of which mattered. The first was used by the native population, a name that would soon be lost in history's pages. The second was the name imposed by its conquerors, which would hold for centuries, branding an imperial identity upon a dead planet. The globe span in the void with an orbit of slow grace, comparable to distant Terra, and its blue-green surface marked it as a younger sibling of that most venerated world. Where Terra's seas were burned dry from centuries of war and tectonic upheaval, the oceans of 4716 were rich with salt-surviving life and deep beyond poetic imagining. Perhaps the future would bring a need for this world to be a bastion metropolis akin to Terra, where the buried earth choked beneath palaces and castles and dense hive towers. For now, its land masses wore the green and brown of unspoiled wilderness, the white and grey of mountain ranges. Cities of crystal and silver, spires that speared the sky from almost laughably fragile foundations, dotted the continents. Each city was linked by well-worn trade roads, freight veins with traffic for blood. This was 4716, the 16th world ready to be brought to compliance by the 47th expedition. 4 weeks after the Word-Bearer's fleet sailed from the ruin of Kur, they translated in system here, prowling around 4716 with a predatory promise of ancient seaborne raiders. The grey warships remained in orbit for 8 hours, engines dead, doing nothing at all. At the 9th hour, cheers echoed throughout every vessel in the fleet. The Primarch appeared on the command deck of Fidelitas Lex, flanked by Erebus and Corpheron. Both Astartes wore their battle armour, the former in the grey of the Legion, the latter in his brutal warplate of the Terminator Elite. A live Pict feed carried the image to the bridge of every warship bearing Legion colours as thousands upon thousands of warriors watched their Primarch return. Clad in sleek armour of granite grey, somehow all the more regal for the lack of ostentation, Lorgar's crooked smile spoke of some hidden amusement he ached to share with his sons. "I hope you will all forgive my absence," the words melted into a chuckle, "and I trust you have enjoyed this time of contemplation and respite." Around him, Astartes' warriors broke into laughter. Corpheron lowered his hollow eyes, giving a bleak smirk. Even Erebus smiled. "My sons, the past is the past, and we look now to the future." In Lorgar's grey fist was his Crozius mace. He carried it over his shoulder with casual ease. "Those of you assigned to other expedition fleets will be granted leave to return to them shortly, but first, we will renew our bonds of brotherhood as a united legion." Another cheer rang out across the decks of over 100 ships. "This is 4716. Lorgar's contemplative smile remained, though melancholy robbed it of some conviction. "A world of such great beauty." With his free hand, he smoothed his fingertips around his short brown beard, little more than neat stubble along his jawline. "I do not believe the people of this world to be irrevocably corrupt, but as we have seen, my judgment has its critics." More laughter. Corpheron and Erebus met each other's eyes, their chuckles joining the legions. "This levity was nothing less than an exorcism, a shedding of humiliation's clinging stink," and both warriors sensed it clearly. "You have all seen the briefing details," said the Primarch. "The first chaplain and first captain inform me that the chapter leaders gathered this morning to discuss objectives and landing zones, so I will not waste your precious time." His dry smile bore little humour now, yet still it remained. "The Emperor wishes the 17th Legion to conquer with greater alacrity. If a world cannot be brought to compliance with haste, then it must be purged to its core. So we come to this." In unison, Erebus drew his Crozius, and lightning rippled in a jagged flow down the claws of Corpheron's gauntlets. "My sons," their master's smile died fast enough for many to doubt it had ever been there, "forgive me for the words duty forces me to speak." Lorgar raised his maul of black iron, aiming it at the planet slowly spinning on the Oculus viewscreen. Storms formed in a crawling meteorological ballet as the Legion stood witness. The fleet's low orbit was curdling the planet's skies. "Word bearers," said the Primarch, "kill every man, woman, and child on that heretic world." Cyrene waited until she realized Argyltal wasn't going to continue. Only then did she speak.
"And did you?" she asked. "Did you do it?"
"You didn't feel the ship quake as it opened fire?"
The captain moved around the room. Cyrene wondered if he were pacing or simply looking at what few personal effects she possessed.
"I find it difficult to believe you slumbered through 12 hours of orbital barrage."
Cyrene hadn't slept at all. When the sirens wailed and the room shook 2 days before, she'd known what was beginning. The Wordbearer's warships commenced their invasion with a full day of cannon fire. At times, when myriad mechanical processes aligned just right, the main batteries hurled their incendiary payloads at the planet below in a united burst. The thunder rang in her ears for half a minute afterwards, and they were the worst moments, blinded and deafened, completely without senses. Anyone could enter her room, and she'd be none the wiser. Cyrene had lain on her uncomfortable bed, enthralled to her imagination, praying not to feel unknown fingers on her face.
"That's not what I meant," she said. "Did you go to the surface after the sky fire had ended?"
"Yes. We landed in view of the only city that remained standing. It had to be destroyed from the ground. Our orbital weapons couldn't pierce its defensive shield."
"You killed an entire world in one day?"
"We are the Legio Astartes, Cyrene. We did our duty."
"How many died?"
Argyltar had seen the augury estimates. They put the number at almost 200 million souls sacrificed that day.
"All of them," said the captain. "A world's worth of human life."
"I don't understand," she said,
closing her useless eyes.
"All those people, why did they have to die?"
"Some cultures cannot be re-educated, Cyrene. When a civilization is founded upon poisoned principles, redemption is a forlorn hope. Better that they burn than live in blasphemy."
"But why did they have to die? What sins have they committed?"
"Because the Emperor willed it. Nothing else matters.
These people spat upon our offers of peace, laughed at our desire to integrate them into the Imperium, and openly displayed the gravest sin of ignorance, forging populations of artificial constructs. The breeding of false life in imitation of the human form is an abomination unto our species, and cannot be ignored."
"But why?" she said.
The words were almost her mantra these days. Argyltal sighed.
"Are you aware of the old proverb, 'Judge a man by his questions, not by his answers'?"
"I know it. We said something similar on Kur."
"It is used across the galaxy in one form or another." "That was the Terran expression, but there is a Colchisian equivalent. Blessed is the mind too small for doubt."
"But why?"
the young woman repeated. Argyltal bit back a second sigh. It was difficult. The girl was immensely naive, and Argyltal knew he was no teacher. But enlightenment had to come from somewhere. There was no honour in making a secret of the truth.
"The answer is in the stars themselves, Cyrene. We are a young species, spread thin across thousands of worlds. The space between the stars holds many threats. Xenos creatures of countless breeds evolved for predation. Those that do not immediately fall upon humanity to feed or destroy tend to be dangerous for other reasons. These ancient civilizations are in decline, either because they were too weak to stabilize after their growth, or because their own hubristic deviant technologies doomed them. There's nothing to learn from these races. History will discard them soon enough. So do we leave human colonies for aliens to prey upon, or do we claim their precious worlds to feed strength to the newborn Imperium? Do we allow these people to linger in ignorance and risk harming themselves, or us? Or do we crush them before they can become a heretical threat?
But...
No. Argyltar's voice was cold stone. There is no but this time. The Imperium is right, and that makes it mighty. So say our iterators. So the word is written, and so it shall be. We succeed where every other human culture has failed. We rise where alien breeds fall. We defeat every solar empire or lonely world that refuses benevolent unity. What more evidence is needed that we, and we alone, walk the right path?
Cyrene fell silent, chewing her lower lip. That makes sense.
Of course it does. It's the truth.
So they are all dead, a whole world. Will you tell me what their last city looked like?
If you wish.
Argaltar regarded the young woman for a long moment. She had healed well in the last 4 weeks, now clad in the shapeless grey robe of a legion servant. When he'd first seen her wearing the uniform of a serf, she'd asked him what colour her new clothing was.
Grey, he'd said.
Good. She smiled at his answer, but didn't elaborate. Argaltar watched her now. She stared at him blindly, her youthful features unclouded by shyness or doubt.
Why are you curious about their city? He asked.
I remember Monarchia, she said. It is only right that someone remembers this city as well.
I'm unlikely to forget it, Cyrene. Spires of glass and warriors formed from moving crystal. It was not a long compliance, but neither was it an easy one.
Was Zaphon with you? He's very kind to me. I like him.
Yes, said Argaltar. Zaphon was with me. He was the first of Seventh Company to see the enemy's blasphemy when the city's force shield came down.
Will you tell me what happened?
Captain, Zaphon voxed, you're not going to believe what I'm seeing.
Argaltar advanced through the outlying ruins, flanked by Torgal assault squad. His grey-clad brothers moved through the streets, crunching on shards of fallen glass architecture. Idling chainswords rumbled in every warrior's gauntlets. Each toothed blade bore bloodstains.
This is Argaltar, the captain voxed back. We're to the west. No resistance worth noting. Status report. Artificials.
Zaphon's voice was flawed by vox distortion, but his disgust came through clear enough.
They're deploying artificials.
Argaltar turned to the east, where the city of veined black stone and glass was already beginning to crack and splinter. Fire ran unchecked along the roads winding towards the city's heart, the clearest sign of the Legion's advance.
Torgal assault squad inbound, he voxed. Word bearers, with me.
The bulky thrusters on his back cycled into life, propelling him skyward with a throaty roar. The altitude gauge on his retinal display pulsed as it updated, overlaying the blue-tinted view through his eye lenses. Low towers of twisting glass and spiralling streets sailed by below. Here was a culture that bred architects who danced to their own tunes. The captain wasn't sure if it was artistic license or the work of some logical process he couldn't fathom. Still, a city of toughened alien glass, roads of black stone. It was beautiful in a way. Madness often possessed a certain loveliness.
I see you, he voxed to Zaphon.
Beneath him, squads of word-bearers moved through the ruins of a levelled city block, pockets of grey armour engaged against a silver abomination that crackled with unhealthy energies. His armour's receptive systems picked up on his confusion and zoomed in on the enemy warriors. Argaltar still wasn't sure what he was looking at.
Down, he commanded Torgal's squad.
Acknowledgement pulses answered over the vox. Argaltar killed his thrust with an instinctive thought. A flashing Colchisian rune on his visor display changed from red to white. With a judder, the jump pack's primary boosters cut out. Smoke trailed from the deactivated wide-mouth thrusters as secondary jets fired, slowing his plummeting descent to a speed just shy of terminal. He came down hard, his armoured boots crunching the road beneath his weight, sending cracks cobwebbing through the black stone. In a wave of howling engine wash and road-cracking landings, the rest of his warriors came down in a loose pack around him.
"Stars above!"
said Torgal, gesturing over the devastation with his purring chainsword.
"I see what the chaplain meant!"
Across the ruined vista of tumble-down glass walls, one of the enemy artificials came on three insectile legs, each with too many joints, and each ending in a blade that spiked the ground with every step. Its torso could almost have been humanoid, but for the fact it was made entirely from moving glass. Beneath its transparent skin, circuits formed veins, metal bars made bones.
"That has to be ornamental,"
Torgal said over the vox, as the artificial glided closer on bladed limbs.
"I mean, just look at it."
You took your damn time, said Zaphon. Get into cover before it fires again.
Argyll-Tal made a break for a nearby glass wall where a handful of Zaphon's warriors were crouching. They weren't hidden, but it was cover nevertheless. The rest of his assault squad spread out.
It fires? Argyll-Tal asked. Are you certain it's not an automated statue and you've been engaging some of the local art in a heroic battle?
It fires, Zaphon grunted, and it won't die. Watch this. Malnor squad, engage.
From a crater ahead, several word-bearers rose in trained unity, each of them opening up with bolt pistols. Shells hammered into the glass creature's body, knocking it off balance, but inflicting no visible damage. Electrical force sparked where each bolt round punched home, detonating the shells before they inflicted anything more than minor kinetic annoyance.
Cease fire and fall back, Zaphon ordered. I'm growing tired of hearing that order, sir,
Malnor's voice crackled, but the bolter fire stopped. The creature immediately righted itself and veered towards where Malnor's warriors crouched in cover. The circuitry, serving as its innards, flared with phosphorus anger and eye-aching electricity speared from its open mouth to dance across the edge of the crater, melting the black stone wherever it touched.
It's made of unbreakable glass, Torgal voxed, and it vomits lightning. The Primarch was right to order these people dead. They are more than heretics. They forge insanity into physical form.
Argyll-Tal swore softly as he listened to vox reports of Legion squads encountering these things all over the city. With the capital's protective shield down, he'd expected this to be easy. The planetary leaders were supposed to be dead, dammit. Why wasn't resistance crumbling?
Torgal squad to higher ground.
By your word, Captain,
chorused the loyal responses. Heat haze rippled the air around each warrior as their bulky jump thrusters cycled back to life. The air was rich with charcoalish engine stink. Argyll-Tal boosted up, straight as a spear, coming down on a balcony overlooking the ruined street. The warriors of Torgal's squad followed, finding their own perches on the edges of nearby rooftops. Grey gargoyles watching the battle below.
How many have you destroyed so far? Asked Argyll-Tal.
Three, but two were drowned by a Vindicator from Firestorm.
Zaphon referred to the Serrated Sun's armor battalion.
Don't tell me the tank was destroyed.
Malnor answered this time.
Then I won't tell you, Captain, but it's not here anymore.
Argyll-Tal watched the artificial stalking closer, maintaining its inhuman balance on those multi-jointed legs despite the punishing terrain. His visor zoomed in deep, clearing after a moment's distortion. Silver veins threaded through the construct's torso, flickering with power. Its skin moved like liquid glass, yet bolter shells sparked aside, as harmless as rainfall.
You said you've killed three of these, but the tanks destroyed two. I killed the third with my Crozius,
Zaphon replied.
The constructs seem vulnerable to power weapons. Understood. Leave this one to us.
Argyll-Tal refocused his visor.
Torgal squad at the ready. We'll fight fire with fire.
By your word,
came the voice chorus again. Argyll-Tal drew both swords, each a red iron blade, housing generators in the ivory crosspieces. His fingers slid to the triggers along the leather-wrapped grips, and twin hums droned as the blades came alive, coated in jagged licks of electrical force.
For the Primarch!
The shout echoed across the street, drawing the artificial's attention. It looked up, with a featureless face. Where a man's mouth would be, the glass visage glowed with rising heat. Argyll-Tal took two running steps. The first sent tremors through the balcony. The second shattered the railing as he kicked off from it, leaping into the air. His thrusters roared, breathing smoke and fire as he fell from the sky. The twin blades trailed blurs of lightning.
Aurelion!
The warriors of Torgal's squad cried out, leaping from their eyries to slice through the air, following their captain down on whining engines.
Aurelion!
Argyll-Tal led the dive, hurling himself to the side as burning electricity arced up from the artificial below. A second later, he was on the creature, twisting around it to bring his boot crashing against its glass head. Chips of diamond sprayed away as its skull snapped back. Both power swords fell a heartbeat later, the blades hammering into the artificial's face. More twinkling shards scattered like hailstones. Sergeant Torgal landed on the automaton's shoulders from behind, his chainsword skidding and scraping along the glass. His bolter barked once, a shell hammering uselessly aside before detonating in the air. With grunts of effort leaving their helm speakers like avian cries, the rest of Torgal's squad descended and added their grinding blades to the assault. They attacked in waves, thrusting skyward while those beneath struck, then diving for another strike as their brothers boosted away. The artificial staggered, reeling under the host's attack, unable to bring its defences to bear against a single threat. Argaltal dived a third time, rasping his sword blades against each other, causing their overlapping power fields to hiss and spit. This time, the blades bit, both carving into the glass throat, sending diamond shards clattering against Argaltal's faceplate. The construct died instantly. Its silver veins turned black, and it toppled to the dust on dead legs. With sedate grace, the five warriors of Torgal assault squad drifted to the ground around their captain. Chain blades growled softer as trigger fingers relaxed. Jump thrusters exhaled as they cooled. Zaphon and Malnor led their warriors from the ruins, bolters held across their chest plates.
"Nicely done," said the chaplain. "Move ahead if you wish, brother. We will purge the road to the city's heart. Don't wait on our account."
Argaltal nodded, still not used to Zaphon's repainted armor. The chaplain's warplate was black, darkened in remembrance of the ashes coating every warrior's armor in Monarchia. Argaltal had said nothing when he'd first witnessed this new tradition, but it still rankled. Some shames were better left forgotten. A spurt of detuned vox preceded another broken voice. "Captain, this is Daggertal." Argaltal looked at the spires making up the city's core. Something there, some hidden machinery, was playing havoc with the communication channels.
"I'm here, Daggertal."
"Requesting permission to summon Carthage."
Zaphon and Malnor exchanged glances, their faceplates concealing their expressions. Torgal gunned his chainsword, the teeth chewing the air for a few seconds.
"Specifics, Daggertal," said Argaltal.
"It's the artificial, sir. They have a king."
Daggertal's squad kept moving through the streets, never going to ground, always watching. As 7th Company's outriders, penetrating a hostile city far ahead of the captain's main force, was nothing new. This enemy, however, brought some foul surprises with them. The army of artificials stalking through the doomed city were putting up ferocious resistance, and that was before the Wordbearer's advance forces began to encounter the Obsidians. Daggertal was one of the first to spot one. He'd leaned forward in his saddle, forcing his visor to zoom and track the black construct making its ponderous way along the street ahead.
"Blood of the Urizen," he swore.
The thing was 2 stories tall, an artificial on 6 legs, its torso cut not from clear glass, but opaque black. He'd voxed the captain immediately while his squad opened fire. The bolters mounted on each bike chattered and crashed. The black glass construct didn't deign to notice. Despite the artificial's apparent weight, its bladed limbs didn't impale down into the road.
"Fall back!"
Daggertal ordered his brothers, and they had, at speed. The grey bikes snarled as they banked around a winding corner, tyres struggling to grip the smooth black stone of the road. Chorus swerved in the lead, his braking wheels screeching as they sheared over the road's surface.
"Careful!"
Daggertal warned.
"Easy for you to say, Sergeant,"
Chorus snapped. Daggertal weaved between his brothers' bikes, effortlessly outpacing them. His jet bike hovered 2 meters above the road, bucking forward with engine wails and bursts of acceleration at the merest pressure from his hands on the throttle. The jet bike ran cleaner than its grounded cousins, its power generator venting much less exhaust than the wheeled bikes in Daggertal's squad. The Wordbearer leaned to his right, sliding around another of the glass city's insane spiraling corners. He slowed, if only a little, allowing his brothers to keep pace. From between 2 spires ahead, another immense artificial came forward on 6 legs, lightning ringing its faceless black skull in a radiant halo.
"Another artificial,"
Daggertal voxed. He used the name already being cried out by Wordbearer squad leaders over the vox.
"It's another one of the Obsidians." "We're being boxed in,"
said Chorus, drawing alongside.
Do we engage? For what? To waste shells?
Dagatol accelerated, feeling the drag in his arms as the jet bike's thrumming engine wailed louder.
Follow me!
He veered left, taking another corner into a secondary street.
We can't keep running, Chorus growled. Our fuel's going to give out if we keep this up.
Dagatol heard the whine of thirsty engines as his men took the corner behind him. Chorus was right. Their bikes' growls were getting dry, and the squad had been playing a game of cat and mouse through these streets for hours now, scouting ahead of the serrated sun's main forces.
We're not running, he replied.
A shadow darkened the street, eclipsing the sun and filling the air with the grind of powerful engines. The sleek craft hovering overhead bore the bionic skull symbol of the Martian priesthood on its wings. Dagatol smiled behind his faceplate.
We're looking for somewhere Carthage can land.
From beneath a red hood, three green islands peered out at the burning city. This triad of visual receptors continually turned and refocused, each lens tuning to degrees of acuity that went far beyond the capacity of human sight.
Processing, the owner of the three eyes said, and then, after a pause of several seconds during which the lenses continued to tune and retune, he added, Acknowledged,
in the same tone. Dagatol's outriders were using this chance to refuel, each Astartes filling their bike's tanks with canisters of promethium taken from the Mechanicum lander's hold. Dagatol remained on his jet bike, the humming gravity suspensors pulsing quieter now they weren't suffering strain.
Two obsidians, he said to the three-eyed man, coming this way.
The Vox was on fire, with squads falling back, summoning help from the Carthage cohort, requesting armor battalions.
The artificials are brutal, Xenu.
I am cognizant of the details, Sergeant Dagatol.
Xenu 73 was a stick-thin being, human only in the loosest sense. His red robe flapped in the heated wind, revealing an augmented body of lustreless iron bound together by industrial cabling. His arms, which he now raised in order to lower his hood, were a skeleton's limbs constructed from contoured armour plating, ending in bronze hands with too many fingers. His face, such as it was, appeared from the lowered hood as a mess of thin wires and a noisy respiration mask, with no other discernible features beyond the green eye lenses that formed a triangle's cardinal points. Xenu 73 had been human once, almost a century ago in the short, fragile 2 decades after his birth. Like all of the Mechanicum of Mars, he'd had to endure those early years living in a shell of warm meat and wet blood until he gained the skill to purify himself. He'd improved himself a great deal since then. The tech priest stood by the Mechanicum lander's cargo ramp, overseeing the ungainly march of several towering figures. Each one was clad in dense armor plating, painted in chipped coats of crimson. They stood almost 5 meters tall, their mechanical joints not even attempting to mimic human motion. The first two down the clanging ramp were gangly crusaders, their long-bladed arms swinging as their shoulders rocked side to side in awkward motion. Circuitry, thick and crude, was etched along the arm sword's edges, linking the blades to power generators in the robots' bodies.
Sanguine, said the first, vocalizing in tinny machine tones. Standing, ready.
Alizarin,
the second intoned.
Standing, ready.
The third figure to stomp down the ramp was twice the width of the first two, bulky where the crusaders were gangly, great fists of riveted metal fused to form siege hammers. Even more than its kin, it reeked of greased machine parts and the earthy scent of lubricating oils. The cataphract-class machine was hunched, made dense by sloping armour, and moved with even less claim to grace than the others.
Vermilion,
it droned as it clanked in line with the crusaders.
Standing ready.
Xenu 73 turned his eye lenses to regard the last machine emerging from the lander's hold. This one seemed a compromise between its construct kin, almost human in its posture and gait, armoured with thick plating and bearing weapons for arms. A third cannon rose from its shoulder with ammunition belts trailing down its back, dreadlocks of bronze shells rattling with each step. Dagatol knew each of Xenu's wards, familiar with them from 12 years of sharing battlefields. This last was a conqueror, and the primus unit of the group. It wore a legion banner over its shoulder, and its armour plating was etched with Colchisian runes. Several of the word-bearers saluted this last robotic warrior. It didn't acknowledge them.
Incarnadine,
the conqueror declared in a voice devoid of personality.
Standing ready.
Xenu 73 turned to the gathered word-bearers, his eyes refocusing yet again.
Greeting, Sergeant. Ninth Maniple of the Carthage Cohort, awaiting orders.
Argeltal hit the ground running, the boosters on his back cycling down as he ran. Both blades were sheathed. In his fists, a richly inscribed bolter bucked with each fired shell. He took refuge with several of his warriors in the lowest level of a glass tower, shooting out of the stained glass windows. Whatever patterns the coloured glass once held were gone, smashed through by word-bearers needing clear lines of fire. The obsidian in the street outside dwarfed them all, liberally blasting the road with streams of electrical force from its featureless face. Argeltal reloaded, and as he slammed a fresh magazine home, he had a momentary glance of a glass shard by his boot, a fragment of the stained glass window showing a figure in golden armour. Dagotal's squad was running interference, weaving between the artificial's insect legs, veering and jinking to avoid its lethal arcs of fire. Bolter shells hammered into its joints from where Torgal's men took what cover they could find, but their efforts were little more than an irritant.
Xenu 73, Argeltal voxed, we're in position. Make this fast.
Acknowledged, Seventh Captain.
They came from behind the construct, emerging from a subsidiary road. Sanguine and Alizarin stalked forwards first with all the grace of stumbling beggars, their movements a stark contrast to the liquid grace of the enemy machine. Lascannon fire streamed from the shoulder mounts of both crusaders, carving searing scars into the obsidian skin, the sludge gleam of melted glass bright against the black. Their arm blades came up on clanking motorized hinge joints, slicing down to chop at the construct's legs. Recognizing this new threat, the obsidian spanned to face the Mechanicum war machines. It turned into a barrage of gunfire, shoulder-mounted heavy bolters punching shards from the construct's face and torso with a torrent of explosive shells. Incarnadine, regal in form compared to its brothers, tracked every movement made by the enemy machine. It didn't cease fire even for a second, nor did a single shot go wide. The obsidian storm stream wasted itself, blasting up at the sky as the Mechanicum robotics knocked it off balance. The Cataphract-class Vermilion, as bulky as an Astartes dreadnought, was an altogether more ponderous engine. Stocky and lumbering, it closed the distance as the obsidian sought to right itself on its four remaining legs. Siege hammers swung in, meeting alien glass with a thunderclap's refrain. Four legs became three. The glass machine crashed to the knees it had left.
Finish it!
Said Argeltal. His jump pack burned again, groaning as the engines drew breath.
By your word, came the vox replies.
The swords came free in smooth pulls, and Argeltal let a short burst of thrust carry him skyward. Even prone, the obsidian offered no purchase. As the word-bearers came down in its back, most elected to hover, burning their jump jets rather than standing upon the thing's body. Swords clashed and carved, but only Argeltal's empowered blades inflicted significant damage, sending shards of dark glass flying with each hack. Even as it died, the obsidian dragged itself across the street, a grasping hand reaching for the closest true threat. Incarnadine stepped back, autocannons laying into the outstretched hand, shearing fingers from the fist. Behind the Imperial war machine, Xenu watched with unwavering attention, occasionally adjusting dials on his chest plate for reasons none of the word-bearers had ever discerned, despite a decade of fighting by his side. When the obsidian lay still at last, Argeltal and Dagotal came over to the tech priest. The downed enemy construct had a shapeless resemblance to a melting ice statue, its body ruined by a thousand bullet impacts, blade cuts and lascannon beams. Both word-bearers crunched closer on the glass shards lining the road.
Greetings, Captain, said Xenu 73, ninth maniple of the Carthage cohort, awaiting orders.
Cyrene paused Argyltar's retelling with a hand on his forearm.
You used artificials yourself?
He'd been expecting this.
The Legio Cybernetica is a treasured facet of the Mechanicum. The Great Crusade leans heaviest on the Legio Titanicus for their war engines, but Cybernetica plays its role among the noblest Astartes legions. Their artificials are robotic shells housing machine spirits. Cybernetica tech priests engineer organic synthetic minds from biological components.
Cyrene reached for the glass of water on her bedside table. Her fingers slid across the metal surface, bumping the glass gently before she got a grip. When she drank, it was in little swallows, and she seemed in no rush to speak again.
You don't see the difference,
Argyltar said, not quite asking. She lowered the glass, facing him without seeing him.
Is there a difference?
Do not ask that question to Xenu 73, should your paths ever cross. He'd be insulted enough to kill you, and I would be vexed enough to kill him in return. Suffice to say, the difference is in the mind. Organic intelligence, even synthetic in nature, is still tied to the perfection of humanity. Artificial intelligence is not. That's a lesson many cultures only learn when their machine slaves rise up against them, as the Obsidians would have done one day to the people of 4716.
You always say we are perfect. Humans, I mean.
So it is written in the Word.
But the Word changes over time. Zaphon tells me it's changing even now. Are humans really perfect?
We're conquering the galaxy, aren't we? The evidence of our purity and manifest destiny is clear.
Other races conquered it all before we did.
She took another sip of the room temperature water.
Perhaps others will conquer it after we do something wrong.
Then she smiled, brushing a lock of hair back from her face.
You are so certain in everything you do. I envy you for that.
Were you not sure of your own life's path back in Monarchia?
She tilted her head, and he read a faint tension in her body language, the slight curl of her bare toes, the fingers gently clutching her grey robe.
I don't wish to speak of that, she said. I just find it curious that you have no regrets, no doubts.
The Astartes wasn't sure how to answer. It's not confidence. It's duty. I live by the word. What is written must come to be. Else all will come to nothing.
That sounds like a great sacrifice to me. Fate shaped you into a weapon.
Cyrene's smile was tinged with an expression somewhere between amusement and melancholy.
The speakers would say such things in their dawn prayers across the perfect city. Walk the one true way, for all other paths lead to destruction.
That's from the word, said Argyltar. Part of the Primarch's wisdom we left to guide your people.
She waved a hand, batting aside his devotion to every detail.
I know, I know. Will you tell me the rest of the story? I want to know more of the city. Did the Primarch fight with you?
The captain took a breath. The girl's mind moved with fleeting touches between subjects.
No, but we saw him at dawn. Before we reached his side, we crossed paths with Aquilon.
Tell me what happened, said Cyrene.
She lay down on her bed, making a pillow of her joined hands. For what use they were, her eyes remained open.
I'm not sleeping. Please go on. Who is Aquilon?
His title is Oculi Imperator,
Argyltar replied.
The Emperor's eyes. We encountered him as the sun set, while most of the city burned.